Shortly before Franklin Delano Roosevelt took the oath of office in 1933, students from four Ohio colleges gathered to debate how America might best extricate itself from the engulfing depression. Hindsight shows that these young people were engaged in a purely academic, which is to say, unrealistic enterprise. The facts were that on the dreary day when FDR took the helm of government, France and England were nationalizing sick industries, Germany and Italy were racing toward military dictatorship, and America was still not ready to recognize a communized Russia. Capitalism had been weighed and found wanting not only in Ohio, but in much of the industrial West when the 50-year-old aristocrat first took charge. It turns out that the undergraduates had worried unduly. It turns out also that Roosevelt became not so much a traitor to his class as a rejector of the idea of class itself. In a series of bold and unprecedented moves, he saved capitalistic democracy. Like Babe Ruth pointing to the center field bleachers, he called his shots in heroic speeches, and when history did not follow the script he had written for it, he took to the airwaves to explain why. He spoke the nation's autobiography while it was being lived, and it was recorded for all time, not merely in print, but in preservable sound. What follows, then, is a diary, a first-hand account of Roosevelt's plans to pull the nation out of the Great Depression. The first inaugural, March 4, 1933, asks a Democratic Congress for broad, sweeping powers to eject the unscrupulous money changers from the seats of power.
This is a day of national consecration. And I am certain that on this day, my fellow Americans expect that on my induction into the presidency, I will address them with a candor and a decision which the present situation of our people impels. This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. 20 years at our doorstep, but a generous use of it languishes in the very sight of the supplies. Primarily, this is because the rulers of the exchange of mankind's goods have failed through their own stubbornness and their own incompetence, have admitted their failure and have abdicated. Practices of the unscrupulous money changers stand indicted in the court of public opinion, rejected by the hearts and minds of men. Restoration calls, however, not for changes in ethics alone. This nation is asking for action, and action now. Our greatest primary task is to put people to work. This is no unsolvable problem if we take it wisely and courageously. It can be accomplished in part by direct recruiting by the government itself, treating the task as we would treat the emergency of a war, but at the same time, through this employment, accomplishing greatly needed projects to stimulate and reorganize the use of our great natural resources. We must act quickly. I am prepared, under my constitutional duty, to recommend the measures that a stricken nation in the midst of a stricken world may require. I shall ask the Congress for the one remaining instrument to meet the crisis. Broad, executive power to wage a war against the emergency as great as the power that would be given to me if we were in fact invaded by a foreign force. The people of the United States have not failed. In their need, they have registered a mandate that they want direct, vigorous action.